This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, in Ireland and indeed in Britain, the public service broadcaster, in our case, of course, RTE, in the British case, the BBC, have sucked most of the oxygen out of the room and the news agenda over the past 10 days. However, there is something more important and more important to people and families, and that is the relative health and weaknesses of the two economies, the British and Irish economy. For example, in inflationary terms, Britain has an inflation rate of 8.7% and Ireland has a core inflation rate of 4.8% or thereabouts. Now, yesterday in Britain, Rishi Sunak announced some news to public sector workers. The teachers' unions accepted it. The doctors and nurses indeed vehemently rejected it. So the question of our economy versus the British economy is really interesting. They have an election and a budget to come. We also have a budget and an election to come. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the stand one of our most valued contributors by listeners and by the team here, and that is Chris Johns. Chris is the former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland and now a very respected commentator with his own podcast, indeed, The Other Hand. Chris, it is make your mind up time for the Chancellor of the Exchequer Hunt in London and for Pascal Donoghue and, more importantly, perhaps for Michael McGrath, the Fianna Fáil Minister for Finance in our coalition government. Chris, the announcement by Rishi Sunak yesterday has a backdrop, and its backdrop is inflation 8.7%, an economy that's really struggling. Is it fair to believe or say that our own economy here is much healthier and that Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue are in much better shape than Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak?
The contrast between the two economies couldn't be starker, and I don't think enough is made of it, because of course I can remember, as you can, Eamon, when back in the 80s and further back, Ireland was regarded as very much the poor relation and lurched from economic crisis to economic crisis, fiscal crisis to fiscal crisis. Your finance minister is now trying to balance expectations, manage expectations about how much money he's going to give away in the forthcoming budget, which may or may not be the last one before the election. It might be, we don't know. Mr. Hunt, sitting in 11 Downing Street, is in a completely different position. He's promised tax cuts ahead of our next general election, which will almost certainly be sometime next year. So this may well be the last budget before the British general election as well. And over here, there's no money. You have got loads of money, and the only issue is whether you're going to save it or spend it. You really do have loads of money, and Britain really does have no spare cash.
Yes, I saw, incidentally, Chris, last night, a figure for British national debt that's looming. It's over 2 trillion, which is shocking. Ours, I think, is 200 billion. But I mean, of course, Britain is a bigger place with a bigger economy. But still, it's a rather frightening number, particularly for a Tory party, which prides itself on its ability to manage the economy.
Yes. And there was a report, I think, that inspired those numbers being published yesterday from the Office for Budget Responsibility. That's the British equivalent of your fiscal council, fiscal advisory council. Each country these days has a budget watchdog that tries to keep politicians honest when it comes to their spending and taxation decisions. And they actually looked ahead to the end of this century. They weren't just looking at current state of fiscal matters. They went all the way to long after we'll have shuffled off this mortal coil, Eamon, and they suggested that British debt will go over three times the size of the economy by 2070.
Yes.
So that is a number that needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. But the substantive point is that whoever wins the next general election, the economy is in such a weak position overall, and therefore fiscally, because it's not generating the tax revenues that are needed to meet things like Sunak's public sector pay thing that he did today, and the wider needs of the public sector, both in terms of current spending on things like wages, but also capital spending on things like hospitals. The money isn't there. And the thing that everybody is ignoring in the UK, but everybody also knows, but we're not allowed to say it, is that whoever wins the next general election is going to be putting taxes up. And that's the fiscal bind that we've got ourselves into. And there are lots of reasons for that. The UK economy, again, this week, we had data saying that the UK economy has yet again flatlined during the first 6 months of this year. Now, you could make the same remark about any six-month period in the last, really, quarter of a century. I exaggerate slightly, but the UK economy has been flatlining essentially for well over a decade. And that has produced all of the problems that we've got now. We could have a long and involved discussion about why the UK economy is in trouble. You'd have to go back through economic history and all the different factors that drive economic growth. But the number one factor that we have no economic growth now is that this economy doesn't invest in itself. Both the public and the private sector simply don't spend money on buildings, on, you know, IT, the things that other, if you compare us to you, Ireland, to the United States, Germany, France, we just do not spend on the hard stuff that is necessary to support economic growth. If you also add in Brexit, which of course we're not allowed to, because nobody's allowed to talk about Brexit, even if you're the Labour leader, if you're a Labour MP, if you talk about Brexit these days, you get kicked out of the party, as far as I can see. So Brexit overlay, the harms of Brexit overlaid with the fact that this economy hasn't invested in itself means that we are in a right mess, unlike you guys.
Now, in contrast, we have, as you said, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, and they have been issuing warnings to the government. The two ministers, Michael McGrath, Fianna Fáil minister in the coalition government, his predecessor, Pascal Donoghue, is now the Minister for Public Expenditure, the National Development Plan, Delivery and Reform. But Pascal Donoghue was genuinely believed to be, have been a very good Minister of Finance. And now Michael McGrath is seen to be a safe pair of hands. However, there seems to be some disagreement between Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach and Tánaiste, because those positions changed halfway through the coalition's period in office. And three junior Fine Gael ministers wrote an article for a newspaper prompted, we're certain, I think it's been admitted, by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, asking for a more expansionary budget. Now, that's putting pressure on Michael McGrath, who is the Fianna Fáil Minister for Finance, and the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council cautioned against us being foolish because our economy is in good shape principally, is it not? You will correct me, I know, because of capital gains taxes and because of companies who manufacture here, although they are German or, sorry, American, or they're involved in pharmaceuticals or the tech industry or indeed in something that isn't guaranteed to last. What should we do here, Chris? What is the prudent thing to do? And why is our economy in so much better shape than the British economy?
Well, if you've got a few hours, I can take you through some Irish economic history that would go back at least to the reforms introduced by T.K. Whittaker in the late 50s and early 1960s.
Yes.
But we don't have time for that.
No, but the IFAC, the Irish Fiscal Authority, they did invoke the crash in the noughties and said that we are in danger if we do spend too much, if the Minister of Finance gives too much, then we'll overheat the economy and we will be back where we were in the nightmare days. The difference then was the amount of exchequer money flowing in was from property tax. In this instance, it's from another tax that may just drift away, which is tech and pharma.
Yeah. IFAC is right to issue these warnings. In a way, it's the job of IFAC to be prudent, to be cautious, to be fiscally conservative. That's why they're there. As I say, we have one in the UK, and they're there to keep politicians honest and stop them from doing, to try and stop them from doing pretty dumb things. The sort of thing that IFAC is warning about was actually done by Rishi Sunak today. And let me just explain for a second. What he's done is that he has given public sector workers the 6 to 7% pay increase, which the independent review bodies have suggested. There's been a will he, won't he thing about these review recommendations for some time, and he's finally made a decision. But how they're going to fund this increase in government spending, because that's what it is, and this is the sort of thing that IFAC is worried about, is an open question, because he said that what we're going to do is we're going to keep existing budgets, the amount of money that we allow these departments who've got to pay these higher wages, we're going to keep their overall budgets the same. So they've got to find cuts elsewhere. Now, there are two things to say about that. First is there is only a very small chance that in the next 12 months that they would find those cuts elsewhere to fund these permanent commitments. So this is a permanent wage increase, yes, which they've got to find out of not just this year's budget, which I don't think they will be able to, but every single budget in the following years.
And in particular, the National Health Service appears to be falling apart.
So where will the NHS find the budget cuts to fund these wage increases? And the answer is they won't. It just won't happen. I don't think it'll even get there this year in the short time period that they have available to them then. But the chances in future years, given the other increased demands on expenditure, forget about it. So it's an example of a permanent expenditure commitment being made by the government, which is the same thing as, say, a tax cut, and there being no obvious way of paying for it.
Yes.
It doesn't have any credibility, and actually it's dishonest, as well as being economically stupid. Now, you rightly say that in the same ballpark of mistakes, that's exactly what we in Ireland did during the property crash before the property crash. We had all these taxes flowing in from capital gains, from stamp duties, from wages, income taxes on wages in the construction sector. There was a tax boom. And we made permanent spending commitments that when these taxes went away,
Yes. Oops,
we had no money. And IFAC is saying that the same thing is going to happen to corporation taxes, because the 10 largest companies, you can name them, they are the Microsofts and all those other names that we know and love. They're not just tech names, they're also pharmaceutical names, pay the bulk of this corporation tax bonanza. Now, anything could happen to these 10 companies. They could go, one of them or more of them could go bust. They could choose to leave Ireland. They could become unprofitable for reasons to do with their own business. So there are lots of risks.
In the case of the American companies, Chris, isn't it the case that Donald Trump in particular was very keen to repatriate that money?
Yeah, and there, more generally, there are moves at the OECD level to try and harmonize corporate taxation around the world so that where economic activity takes place is where the taxes are paid. And whether or not Donald Trump ever gets back into power, and what he would actually do with this, I'm not entirely sure. So, but you're right. There are threats from various sources, but there are also upside risks to this. I would argue that the companies that are in that list of 10 include those that currently whose share prices are going through the roof. And the reason why their share prices are going through the roof is that people are willing to bet, correctly or incorrectly, nobody actually knows, that the growing boom in artificial intelligence will lead to a profits boom for these companies. In which case, it's perfectly possible that the corporation tax take in Ireland from these companies in the years ahead will actually go up, not down. So nobody knows, of course, what's going to happen. But it is nevertheless prudent to worry that the worst could happen. Yeah. So you hope for the best and plan for the worst. And so what the finance minister is planning to do is create a number of funds to park the money for a rainy day and for infrastructure spending, which is all terribly sensible. IFAC worries that he's not doing enough of that, that they're going to bake too much into, I think it's 6.5% at the moment from the summer economic statement plans that,
yes,
that they are going to increase spending. IFAC saying that's too much. It busts their own pre-existing self-imposed limits, and it risks making the mistakes of the past. I think they're right to issue those warnings, but you can understand perfectly well why the government's going to ignore them. He's got an election due in the next couple of years, and the normal dynamics of a general election, just as they are here in the UK, Jeremy Hunt, our finance minister, has tried to promise tax cuts, and he's rowing back from those promises of pre-election tax cuts now because there ain't no money. There is always the temptation for politicians is to juice the economy, yes, before the election for obvious reasons. We can't do it because we haven't got any money. You can do it because you've got loads of money. The issue is whether or not it's prudent to do so. It's probably not, but you're going to do something anyway, and you have to recognise political realities.
Yeah, and one of our political realities, Chris, is that the coalition is unprecedented between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil has always been the party that has been more inclined to spend and to indulge their desire for popularity by spending. Fine Gael has been the sort of, as I'm sure I'm telling you something you know, they've always been keener on financial prudence. But what's happened now is there's been a bit of a change. The Fine Gael junior ministers are arguing that prudence be damned. And it's the Fianna Fáil minister, Michael McGrath, who's trying to put the brakes on.
This is pure politics. And I think, yep, that there are two drivers of this. There's the first one is the one that I just mentioned, the traditional pre-election temptation to juice the economy. And in the past, that was done using borrowed money. The ironic thing now is that you don't have to borrow to give the economy a boost,
no,
to bribe the electorate with their own money, if you like. It's that you've got it. It's sitting there in the coffers of the Department of Finance.
You be a man for prudence or a man for what we call flahulacht here, for throwing a few bob at the people?
I'd be for throwing it at the people, because I think the overheating worries are overhyped, because that's another reason why organisations such as IFAC, but not just the Fiscal Advisory Council, the ESRI, have issued similar warnings about the dangers of Irish overheating because we're at capacity constraints and all the rest of it. I think that there are lots of technical reasons why those worries are a little overblown. They're not completely overdone, but I do think that we need to worry about them less than we are in the past.
Yeah, and it should be said that Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath appear to have a very good relationship, and Donoghue is a notably sensible and sober politician, as indeed is McGrath. So there's no volatile character in the room, and therefore we have, you would argue, a little bit of room to, you know, the people are suffering terribly with the housing crisis we have here. It's deeply shocking. It's shameful. And also with the health service we have, which is similarly overstretched and shameful. But they can't be fixed in a budget, can they? These are long-term problems.
Arguably, they can't be fixed in a full electoral cycle, at least historically.
Yes.
They haven't been. And I think that it's the same here in the UK. One of the things that frustrates people like me is the lack of honesty in political debate, and that we actually need somebody, a leader, to show some leadership and stand up and say, look, these problems are really, really deep-seated, because here too in the UK, we have a real problem with house prices and housing availability, both for sale and for rent. And of course, I suspect we could have an interesting conversation of just how bad our relative to health services are.
Yes.
That would be a very nasty competition, I suspect.
But in terms of the economies, Ireland is prospering relative to Britain, but then almost every other country probably is as well.
Yes.
After 13 years of Tory rule.
Britain does have very, very acute problems. It has that worst inflation problem of almost any modern large economy that you care to look at, particularly in Europe, but particularly compared to the United States. The UK's inflation rate is probably on a, what we call a harmonized basis to enable us to do these international comparisons. It could be approaching three times what the inflation rate is in the United States. And you're looking at a country, the UK, where the underlying inflation problem on recent data has been getting worse. In the United States, arguably on recent data, may not last, but at the moment it looks like the US has solved its cost of living crisis, has solved its inflation
problem. It's down to 2%, is it, Chris, or 2.something%?
2.7% on that harmonized basis. And if you look at things on that core basis that you mentioned earlier on, it's even lower. So it's looking pretty good. All US financial markets reacted very positively this week to that news. For now, at least, because one of the things I expect for the future is that I think inflation is going to be quite volatile. But the story from the States is very, very good. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And Ireland sits in between the two. On that same harmonized basis, the headline inflation rate is just over 6%. Harmonized rate is about 4.8%. So you're not doing as well as the United States, but you're doing a heck of a lot better than the United Kingdom.
And of course, the Tories have a problem in particular at the moment. They're facing five UK by-elections.
It depends whether Nadine actually does resign or not, I think.
Oh, yeah. She's promised to, hasn't she?
She promised to, but she
Nadine
hasn't.
Doris, that is.
Yes.
Former Culture Secretary, who this time last year was threatening to make the BBC redundant and turn it into a subscription-only service, and also to privatise Channel 4. But she's gone off into the sunset, it appears, writing column for the Daily Mail. That's probably the equivalent of the sunset.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let me just move on, Chris, to a rather tragic story that emerged this week about the BBC broadcaster Hugh Edwards. He was really the face of the BBC. He was the person who announced the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. He was the anchorman for King Charles III's coronation. He was the anchor for BBC's 10 o'clock news at night, a very respected and credible figure who found himself for reasons to do with his private life in the eye of a storm generated by the Sun newspaper, largely, it seems. This is a rather tragic story because his wife, a very brave woman who herself is a journalist, came out this week and said he was the TV journalist that there had been so much speculation about involving a relationship with a younger adult.
Yes, as you say, it is a tragic story. Hugh Edwards is from a town called Bridgend, not too far away from where I grew up. And he has this self-declared history of depression, mental illness. And obviously one needs to be very careful about everything that one
says. Yes, and he's now in hospital.
According
to his wife, he's in a very bad way.
He's in a bad way, as you say. It depends. One's reaction to this, I think, could fall into all sorts of different categories. And I struggle, actually, to make my mind up about how hard-hitting to be about, for example, the tabloid press here in the UK. Because there was an extraordinary episode on Newsnight the other night. You probably saw it, where Rod Liddell and Adam Bolton, both journalists, both aging journalists now, both still in the pay, one either directly or indirectly, of Rupert Murdoch, defending the Sun. And
yes.
Rod Liddell described the Sun's response to all of this as impeccable. Now, even by Rod Liddell's standards, I found that somewhat extraordinary, to say the least.
He's a man with whom I'm not unacquainted.
Indeed.
He's a Millwall supporter that I once accused of running off with a young one.
Yes.
It was not one of my finest hours, shall we say.
We've all had the moment.
Yeah.
And I was wondering whether these two journalists had come to some kind of pact to support the stance that the Sun had taken. Little described the Sun's stance as impeccable, which was an extraordinary word to use, given what they actually did. And there are all sorts of people walking around saying that the Sun could potentially be the subject of a libel action. Some prominent journalists have said that. Some prominent lawyers have said that's going to be very difficult because the Sun has never named this individual until his wife came out. So there's all sorts of legal shenanigans likely to happen around this. But in terms of what the tabloid press did, what the Sun did, it depends which lens you look at it through. If you look at it through quite a restricted lens and say, well, this clearly was of public interest, whether it was in the public interest as a story, I'm not entirely sure. And they were almost certainly right to have published something, given that they were contacted by the individual's parents, the young person that was concerned, parents contacted them. So, but then the way in which it does it, and frankly, the prurient way in which it always prints these stories, I think was indefensible. But then I examined my own motivation for saying this and say, well, look, I'm looking at that, thinking about everything else the Sun and other tabloid newspapers have done throughout their history. The Sun itself, not too long ago, used to publish near naked pictures of 16-year-old girls.
Yes.
And so there's a certain amount of hypocrisy involved. And so if you look at it in the context of Murdoch, the Murdoch press, the tabloid press generally, how it functions in the UK, you would say this is just one more episode out of a long number of similar episodes where these newspapers behave disgracefully. And that's the stance that I essentially take on that.
Yeah.
One story that is worth recounting here is, it was well known a few years ago, there was a well-known interview published with, I won't name the newspaper, these papers can be very litigious, in which a journalist was asked by an interviewer, how do you feel about your job that essentially involves destroying people's lives? And it was quite clear from the answer that the journalist concerned, the tabloid journalist concerned, didn't understand the question. And so the interviewer tried to explain the question in a broader context about what destroying somebody's life actually means. And the journalist concerned said, no, I understand what destroying people's lives means, but I don't understand why you're asking me the question, because that's my job.
Yes, well, happily we're not in that field of work at the moment. I just would say one thing, and it's important to give some context to the Sun's pursuit of Hugh Edwards, and it is that we learned yesterday that Newsnight, which is, of course, the flagship evening late-night news programme, was itself investigating Hugh Edwards because some younger people in the BBC had alleged that they had been harassed and intimidated by Hugh Edwards, who's a 61-year-old man, as I pointed out earlier, a very respected journalist, broadcast journalist, the father of five children. And it is tragedy, really, isn't it? And just to confirm, Chris, the police in England have said that no criminality is involved at this stage.
Yes, they said that nothing, they're closing the file on this unless some more complaints emerge. That, of course, people are always free to make fresh complaints. For broader context, whilst, of course, no behaviour like this is excusable, the behaviour itself has been deemed to be not criminal, the BBC receives hundreds, if not thousands, of similar complaints every year.
Yes.
And has to investigate or at least examine every single one of them. And so that's just some context for this. People are having a go at the BBC for all sorts of reasons. Another aspect of this that I think is worth mentioning, and it may well have been pure coincidence, but Newsnight, just a few days before this story broke, was running stories about sexual harassment in Westminster, yes, and featured young women telling their stories, narratives about the behaviour of MPs and Lords from all sides of politics in the UK. And it was quite shocking. And
yes,
I wonder just how convenient it has been for the establishment to have this story.
Yes, indeed.
Just as your media story has sucked the oxygen out of all sorts of different areas of news in, yes, in Ireland. In here in the UK, this story has dominated the airwaves, not least the BBC airwaves, for a week now. And that story, that Newsnight story about sexual harassment in Westminster has just disappeared as a result.
Just to end, Chris, our conversation on a note of levity, should we say, the first BBC, while all this talk about a mystery BBC personality broadcaster was flying around, the first person out of the traps to say it wasn't him was Gary Lineker. Who on earth could possibly have thought that Gary Lineker would do anything wrong?
Indeed.
That's a tough for you. Thank you very much, Chris. As always, Chris Johns, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland and a very valued contributor to The Stand. Thank you, Chris. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.